Hello and welcome to the second series of the King's Cast. Our criminal justice system is an old one, and although some features have remained the same, in philosophy and practicality, it has evolved. The purpose of the justice system, to punish or to rehabilitate, has often been debated, and in recent times we have seen a rise in restorative justice. Here to discuss this with me are Caroline Rowntree, Lead Practitioner for Restorative Justice Solutions, and Dom Pinto, Head Teacher at King's School. Good morning.
Morning.
So, Dom, would you mind starting us off, please, and give us a brief context of where restorative justice fits in terms of the law?
Yeah, thanks, Miss Parsons. Just to give a little bit of, probably a little bit of context from my background. My background is a law background. My degree is in law, and for the vast majority of my teaching career, I taught law at A-level. And a significant element of the law specification at A-level is around the criminal justice system and offenders and offending and obviously how they are responded to. And to be honest, in terms of how that has had an impact on my career now as a teacher and latterly as a head teacher, they are quite interlinked in terms of how the law responds to restorative justice and restorative behaviours versus how, you know, for example, running a school. So in the early 2000s, the sentencing guidelines were changed quite significantly from how they used to be, and they became much more of a focus on restorative practice and the words like reparation, which is in simple terms means to give back. And there seemed to be, obviously, the justice system. I'm sure Caroline will talk about this with much more authority, but the justice system obviously very consciously made an effort on stopping reoffending rather than punishment being a main aim. So whilst punishment is an aim of sentencing, when somebody commits a crime and they're sentenced for what they've done, punishment still remains, but it's probably become less and less pertinent over the years with more of a focus on restorative justice and reparation and giving back. And that can form a wide range of different examples from giving back stolen property, from meeting with victims, from obviously having that opportunity to repair the damage that you've done. I think in schools, kind of trying to link it to where schools are, especially post-COVID pandemic, there is now much more of an emphasis in schools around restorative practice and relationship building. And maybe going back 10 years, behaviour systems as such in secondary schools were a little bit more punitive. Now behaviour system in schools are probably focusing maybe on the right things a little bit more in terms of if student behaviours might not be right, what are we doing to help amend those behaviours and focus on restorative conversations with it, be it with other teachers or students. So I think it's a really interesting link between education and the justice system in terms of how restorative justice works.
Thank you. You've mentioned there that in the past there was a focus in the justice system on offenders, and actually the work, the time, the energy, the money, I suppose, was put into the punishment, or the focus was very much on fixing the offender or working with the offender. How do you feel that has perhaps changed recently? How does society perhaps perceive offenders now? And either of you, feel free to pitch in.
I think with the sentencing guidelines and the aims of sentencing as they kind of currently are, and they have been over the last 15, 20 years, is that there was an acceptance that punishing somebody, use prison as an example, as a custodial sentence, especially if it was a short-term prison sentence, it failed or traditionally fails to address the offender's need. And often there is a need, or should I say a cause, as to why somebody's committed an offence. Now, the obvious ones, and I'm stereotyping here and probably not being very sophisticated in my approach to this, would be it could be drug-related, it could be poverty-related. There is often things going on in people's lives that make offending often essential for them to do. And really, a short-term prison sentence, for example, is not often going to solve a problem. But that kind of reparation, the restorative justice, rehabilitation, which can be argued could be a form of restorative justice, became more of a focus. And it's interesting when you think about, again, how schools operate. Say we have a student with us, and I'm pleased to say it happens very, very rarely, who might not get something right in a lesson, to remove them from that lesson to go and do something else and then put them back in without anything else being done is it going to work? Well, why would it if nothing's really been addressed or conversations haven't been had? So I think there's that rehabilitation focus is probably something that's become, as I said, very pertinent over the last at least 10 years.
I think you make an awful lot of really good points there. I think I wonder if it might be a helpful thing if I explain what restorative justice is before we talk about it more. Basically, in a nutshell, to make it as easy as possible, it's a conversation. It's a conversation between two people, a conversation between a victim of crime or a victim of harm, someone who has been affected by harm, and the person who caused that harm. Typically, we call them the offender. It's certainly in the criminal justice system. It's not something that is used in place of the criminal justice system. It's used as well as it. So someone will still do their prison sentence, or they'll still do their probation or their community order. And there will also be the option on top of that to do this, to have that conversation. What we find, particularly in West Yorkshire, where the focus is on helping victims of crime cope and recover, we have a lot of people who are approaching us and they'll say things like, you know, I'm glad that the criminal justice system did its thing. I'm glad that person got caught and I'm glad they went to prison. But maybe they're coming out in a month and I know that they're going to be living four streets down from me. And what do we do if we bump into each other again in the freezer aisle of Tesco's? Which is very similar to what you're saying about the classroom issue of, okay, that happened, a punishment happened, but how do we move forward from it? I think that's where the link is.
Do you find that, Caroline, have you seen a change in attitudes, you know, in recent years to engage with restorative practice, i.e. for people, the people is the same as they always have done, are prepared to kind of hold their hands up and accept responsibility for their actions and repair that damage, or is it very much a kind of case-by-case basis?
It's always a surprise to me, if I'm honest. I shouldn't say it's a surprise to me, but I can never, I mean, I've been working in restorative justice coming up on a decade now, and I can never put my finger on who's going to be interested in this process and who isn't. There's no, as far as I can tell, there's no hard and fast, this kind of person, they will want this kind of thing. I think sometimes it can depend on the offence. I've known some people say, you know, I would consider this for a burglary, but I wouldn't consider it for an assault. I'd consider this for shoplifting, but I wouldn't consider it where there was a death involved. And I think some of that depends on the harm that is caused. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. We could all today have exactly the same offence happen against us, the exact same harm happen against us, but we would all be affected differently.
And Caroline, a bit about some practicalities then. So, from your involvement, where would the process begin?
That is an excellent question. So I think for a lot of people who are hearing about this for the first time, or when they hear about restorative justice for the first time, their concern can be that if they get involved in this as a practice, that they are going to help that offender get a lesser sentence or get a lighter sentence. Restorative justice isn't something that's offered until sentencing has already happened, just to keep those two things separate and so that there's no confusion with it. But after that sentence has been handed out or after that punishment has been doled out, then restorative justice can be offered. And it can be offered at any point. It can be offered for some people, they look for that conversation in the weeks and the months after an offence has happened. And for other people, it's years. So if I look at my caseload, for example, at the moment, I have someone on my caseload where the offence happened to them in August of this year. We're recording this now in October. And for somebody else, the offence against them happened 15 years ago. Everybody chooses this at a different point, depending on their own circumstances, their own needs, and what they're hoping to get out of this process.
So does that mean that what the restorative justice looks like in terms of, again, practicalities about what are the meetings like, what are the outcomes and that kind of thing? I assume that those are quite personalised as well.
Absolutely. And everybody looks for something a bit different. For some people, there's questions outstanding about what's happened, and it's the lack of answers to those questions that stop somebody being able to, for want of a better phrase, stop being able to put it to bed. So if I was to give you a very silly example, but one that sticks with me, is one of my very, very first cases was a burglary. And it was a family who lived in a house that was broken into. And as far as that family went, everything about the offence, they were kind of all right with. They were annoyed about it, obviously. But for them, they said, you know, he took our car keys and that makes sense to me. And he took our games console and that makes sense to me. Where they got stuck is that they said, but when we went into the kitchen, all of the fruit was out of the fruit bowl. And that doesn't make any sense to me. And it was the simplest of things. We went and we asked that offender. We said, what's the deal with the fruit, really? And he came back with saying, my mum used to keep all of her spare change in her fruit bowl. So I just thought I'd check. And it was the sort of thing that you could imagine in 5-10 years time, that family would still be going, what was the deal with the fruit? Having an answer, no matter how small or how insignificant or inconsequential, can make the difference between someone who is able to stop thinking about that offence or move forward from it to someone who still, it still bothers them years down the line. Other people, they look for something different. They look for the opportunity to talk about the impact of an offence. They want their chance to have their say because a court doesn't always give you that. An offender goes to court and he pleads guilty. There's no trial. So there is no opportunity for a victim to have their say, for want of a better phrase. The criminal justice system we have in this country, much as I get it and much as I see why it's set up the way it is, it's set up for offenders, not set up for victims well at all.
I was going to ask you that question, but you probably kind of answered it by the fruit bowl example, probably gave the victims the answer they needed to be able to move on. But do you think that the focus on the offender that there naturally is as part of this process then has a detrimental effect on the victim, or do you feel that in most cases the victims do take from the process what they need?
I think it depends on what you want from it. I mean, sometimes a victim will get exactly what they need from the criminal justice system. They will get someone who is caught. They will get someone who is punished. They will get someone that they then don't have to think about for the remainder of their sentence. And that's fine. For other people, there's maybe something else. Mm. And certainly, I mean, in the case of the person I'm working with, whose offence happened against her 15 years ago or so, the criminal justice system did everything that she needed it to 15 years ago. But 15 years on, she's a different person. Mm. And the offender is a different person. And therefore, they need different things.
Well, then, are some of the cases really quite drawn out? Are there times when perhaps one side or the other doesn't want to engage with the process, but the party that does want to pursue it keeps going and keeps asking? Can some of these cases be quite drawn out then?
Absolutely, yeah. Some of them can be done in a matter of weeks. Some of them, it takes years. There's different reasons for that. If I think about one of my most recent cases, which was a face-to-face meeting, it was 2.5 years in the making. Because the offender was quite vulnerable, but so was the victim. So at every point where one party was ready and good to go, the other person wasn't. And at the point where that person was ready and good to go, the other person wasn't. Both of them wanted restorative justice. Both of them wanted to meet. Both of them were really clear that they would benefit from that. But it took a long time, because of the people that they were, to be in a process where they were ready for it.
Do you have to do then, again, probably preempted my next question, would be, if the victim and the offender are prepared to engage within the process and they're prepared, for example, to meet face to face, to have a discussion, do they have to have any level of, not training as such, but I can imagine a face to face conversation between two people could go quite quickly the wrong way if the meeting doesn't go as it was planned.
That is true. So it is risk assessed and risk assessed and risk assessed. And certainly we work in partnership with all the people involved in the care and the risk management of both parties, be that victim services, be that probation, be that the prisons. We lay all of our concerns out on the table with all of those parties. And sometimes the concern is easily addressed. Whenever an offence happens, both parties, the harmed and the harmer, the victim and the offender, they have a story. to their mind of what happened and why it happened, and they get quite fixed on that. And sometimes what we find on our first meetings is that story's not right, that story's incorrect. So a case example, a recent case example was a case of, it was death by dangerous driving. And where a family member of the deceased wanted restorative justice. And one of the things that she was particularly aggrieved about was that the offender's family had contacted her to express sympathy, to express remorse, all of these things. But she had never heard from the person that killed her family member. And she found that really disrespectful and really offensive. And it wasn't until our first meeting where we asked him about that, where he said, I was told very clearly by the police that I was not allowed to contact her. Absolutely not. So I was doing what I was told. So what had looked to her as disrespect was actually forbidden by law, for want of a better term. So sometimes it's those stories then that you need to break down. And sometimes fixing some of those stories is what makes a conversation less risky. In terms of the actual face-to-face meetings, sometimes they can get angry and sometimes they can be tense, but we have ground rules and they're very clear that if this becomes abusive, if this becomes violent, we're stopping this, because otherwise that just causes more harm, which is absolutely the opposite point. If we have concerns, there's other things that we can offer. It doesn't have to be the face-to-face meeting. Some people prefer that, but other people prefer something a bit more indirect, letters, recordings, Zoom, because, you know, post 2020, aren't we all just doing things online?
Can I ask, Dom, earlier on you mentioned about restorative behaviour within a school context. It is important, I think, that in our society there is a raised awareness of the balance between an offending party and a victim party. And within school, traditionally, you'd always assume that the teacher is the person in authority, and the student has to be the one that kind of toes the party line, as it were. You mentioned earlier on about the example of going back into a classroom after an incident. What do you think we can take from restorative justice as a society philosophy, I suppose?
I think there needs to be a greater emphasis on it. I mean, we as a school, like every school up and down the country, will have a behaviour system. And a behaviour system is, if applied consistently and fairly, usually works. But what often happens is that a behaviour system, as good as it may be, will generally only work for 98% of the population, because human beings are human beings and people have different things going off in their personal lives, outside of school, family life, etc. So sometimes on a Monday morning, a student may come into a school setting with having a very difficult weekend and might not be in the right frame of mind to learn. And sometimes, you know, we our system, our consequence system that we employ in our classrooms, as I said, works for most people. But if somebody in a classroom or a student in a classroom gets it wrong, quite often there's a perceived injustice, and it may be the case, it may not be the case, and so we all get things wrong. I get things wrong several times a day, and sometimes classroom teachers can get things wrong. But I think we part of our new behaviour system, if you like, that we put into operation since September this year, last month, has been very much a focus on that restorative justice and that restorative conversations, where a student can sit down with a member of staff, and often that it's the rationale. And that member of staff being able to explain, okay, you got it wrong in my lesson this morning, but actually this is why I took the action that I did. This is why what happened. And often, as in most people in life, if people understand it, they can get their head around it. I think we've got to be, as a school, proactive in our pastoral care, because actually, if we're aware of an issue that a student has, which might put them in a frame of mind to get things wrong, then the teacher needs to know that. So it's almost pre-restorative. To make sure that doesn't actually have to happen. So I think whenever you're working with people and you're working with human beings, we've got to make sure we get to the guts of what drives people and what causes people to behave as they do.
I think you make the point well of it doesn't have to be one thing or the other. sometimes it is appropriate to have punishments and those be punitive, and that's fine. But you can also have that conversation about what happened, why did it happen, where do we go from here, how do we be with each other, how do we move past this and not just get stuck. It doesn't have to be an either or, it can be a both.
Exactly. It's that conversation, that interaction. You have an argument or you fall out with somebody, without some level of reconciliation, then he's never going to get back to where you want it to be.
Thank you ever so much for your time. Thank you for listening.